This evening's reading is taken from 1 Thessalonians, reading from chapter 4, verse 13, through to chapter 5, verse 11. Brothers, we do not want you to be ignorant about those who fall asleep, or to grieve like the rest of men, who have no hope. We believe that Jesus died and rose again, and so we believe that God will bring with Jesus those who have fallen asleep in him. According to the Lord's own word, we tell you that we who are still alive, who are left till the coming of the Lord, will certainly not precede those who have fallen asleep. For the Lord himself will come down from heaven with a loud command, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trumpet call of God, and the dead in Christ will rise again. After that, we who are still alive and are left will be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. And so we will be with the Lord forever. Therefore, encourage each other with these words. Now, brothers, about times and dates, we do not need to write to you, for you know very well that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. While people are saying peace and safety, destruction will come on them, suddenly as labour pains on a pregnant woman, and they will not escape. But you, brothers, are not in darkness, so that this day should surprise you like a thief. You are all sons of the light and sons of the day. We do not belong to the night or to the darkness. So then let us not be like others who are asleep, but let us be alert and self-controlled. For those who sleep, sleep at night, and those who get drunk at night. But since we belong to the day, let us be self-controlled, putting on faith and love as a breastplate, and the hope of salvation as a helmet. For God did not appoint us to suffer with suffer wrath, but to receive salvation through our Lord Jesus Christ. He died for us, so that whether we are awake or asleep, we may live together with him. Therefore, encourage one another and build up each other, just as in fact you are doing.
We continue with our look at Paul's letter to the Thessalonian church. And the verses we read tonight continue what Paul has got to say, and he deals with particular issues. One, of course, is death. We know, all of us, that death and bereavement are never happy matters. It doesn't matter who you are. Losing someone close is like losing a part of yourself. However, having a living faith in the one who was the first to conquer death does make a difference. In the first century AD, people used to put little epitaphs up over graves. And in Rome, they've discovered quite a number. And they differ quite amazingly in the sort of content as to whether they were pagan ones or Christian ones. And one of the pagan ones says this: I was not, I became. I am not, I care not. That's a happy epitaph, isn't it, to have on your grave? Whereas one of the Christian ones, one of the most succinct ones, says, in peace. Yeah. Stephen Hawkins, you may have heard of. What was his view of death? Well, this is what he said in one of his books. I regard the brain as a computer which will stop working when its components fail. There's no heaven or afterlife for broken down computers. That's a fairy story for people afraid of the dark. Well, I'm afraid that Stephen Hawkins will have found out the truth by now. But at the time of Paul, there were lots of Greek philosophers around who had very similar views. Aeschylus said quite categorically, there's no resurrection. Theocritus said, we are without hope when we die. And Catullus said, we enter endless night. Again, quite exciting prospects if you want to follow that view. Paul's view was totally different from that. But the problem was that whilst he was in Thessalonica, remember he's only there a short time before he had to run away because of the persecution that was coming. He had to move, he was moved out to somewhere else. He didn't have time to share all his thoughts with the new Christians. Clearly, they'd been expecting Christ's return quite soon. We know that because some of them had already given up work, hadn't they? Remember, Sid mentioned that a while back. No work for some people. Oh, we haven't got time for that anymore. We've got to get ready for Christ's return. But they had a couple of problems to resolve, and that is these problems that Paul tackles in this part of the letter. The first problem is to do with bereavement. Now, some of the Thessalonians' family or friends had died in the period between Paul's visit and Timothy's checkup visit a bit later. What had happened to them? Where were they now? Would they miss out when Jesus returned? Because they weren't there anymore. They weren't there to be taken up with Jesus. What was going to happen? Paul hadn't had a chance to address issues like that. And obviously, these worries, as we read in verse 13, was affecting their lives. Now, obviously, grieving is an essential part of bereavement. But it shouldn't mirror the gloomy hopelessness of the pagans round about them. That's what Paul had to say for them. Now, when he talks about death, he uses the word, quite often, sleep. People who are asleep, as many people did in those times. Now, when he's saying, when you die, you're asleep, he's not referring to some sort of unconscious state that you're left in, a state of suspended animation, but he's merely saying that the body has finished its work and it's now at rest. It's like a day at work. You go to bed, you lie down, you fall asleep. But of course, in the morning you have to wake up, don't you? Normally. And so death, similarly, you fall asleep, but you're woken up for resurrection. That's the parallel. Did you know that the word cemetery comes from a Greek word, and the word means a place to sleep? So that's what cemetery means. It's a place for sleeping bodies. So, falling asleep, dying, is like lying down for a nap and waking up in glory, which is quite a nice experience, I should imagine. I haven't got there yet. And the soul continues moving into richer and fuller experience than when on earth. It's the body that's in the grave. And so in verses 15 to 17, Paul summarizes the events that will take place. Either he got this view from a direct revelation from God himself, he received a number of those, or it's based on some unwritten teaching that Jesus actually gave, which is another possibility because not everything that Jesus taught was written down. But we have the teaching of the four R's. We have, first of all, the return, or parousia, as it is in Greek. The return will take place. How will it take place? Well, he says, briefly, with a shout, to start off with. This is like a captain telling the rowers of the boat, get rowing, come on, come on, you know, that sort of thing. Or a soldier giving a command to his men. So, there's going to be a shout, there's going to be a trumpet call, and a trumpet call is always, you know, calling people together in the Bible. And there's going to be a few angels around too. And don't forget, angels are the ones without wings. Cherubim and seraphim have wings, angels don't. Just remember that, because when you see the pictures, they're wrong. So, first of all, return. Second, resurrection. Who is resurrected? Well, those who are already dead. In fact, it's actually really already taken place. My own view is that when you die, you actually go out of time. And everything all comes together at the same time, the return and everything. So you actually wake up and it's Jesus' return at the same time. That's my view, but it's only personal. So the people who are dead are resurrected. So return, Jesus comes, dead, resurrected, and then it's the rapture. The rapture means literally seizing of those who are still alive on the earth and dragging them up into the sky to join with the others. So they'll be carried off to join with the others. So we've got return, resurrection, rapture, and meeting them in the sky is the reunion. We all have my wife's got to go to a school reunion in October. This will be a slightly more joyful occasion, I think, in the sky. And it's interesting. It says they will be caught up in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. Now, the word meet sounds like a common or garden word, doesn't it, in our translations? But it's not. The Greek word for meet here means it's the protocol of an honoured guest coming. And it's what you do to get ready to meet and greet them. So it's like honoured guests, like the Queen coming to Holiday Bible Club. Didn't Hillary tell you? Oh no. It's not quite definite yet. But if she were coming, you know, we might put on a special, I don't know what, we'll have Mags playing on the piano and, you know, things like that, just to make it special. So, what is being said here, that when we go up to meet the Lord in the sky, it'll be like us being received as honoured guests. Isn't that a fantastic thought? So, those are the four R's. And Paul goes through like lightning. You know, he doesn't spend time going into the details. So, we've got return, resurrection, rapture, reunion. And we led off to the forever time, the eternity with Jesus. So, what he's trying to say, the point he's trying to make, is that the people who had died before the Lord Jesus returned are not going to miss out on anything. Don't worry, folks. Don't worry. They're not missing out. We'll all be together. It'll all happen at the same time. Whew, that was a relief for the Thessalonians. It's going to be a huge encouragement to them as it provides hope for the future and also a source of comfort at the same time of those who've already fallen asleep. So that's the first problem. The second problem that's causing them anxiety is, how do you prepare for Jesus' return? How do you do it? Do you give up work and just, you know, sit down in your armchair with your newspaper and wait? Well, he's clearly taught them the importance of the day of the Lord and what it entails, and they knew that that would be God's winding up of history. But just like the apostles before them, they wanted to know the times. They wanted to know the dates. Do you remember that conversation that the disciples had with Jesus? And Jesus said, no, 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 no. It's not about times and dates. You don't need to know that. I don't even know that, he says. Only the Father knows when this is going to happen. That's in Mark, chapter 13. And the only thing that they definitely knew was that the time could not be definitely known. You got that? They definitely knew that they couldn't definitely know the time. And nor can anyone. So it's a waste of time for anyone to sit down and work it out. And so many people have got it wrong. Well, everyone, actually, so far. So, what was crucial in getting ready? Well, Paul uses first two metaphors to help them understand. First, he talks about a thief. Now, Jesus has already mentioned this in Matthew chapter 24. What he's saying here is that unlike Morrison's or Tesco's, burglars do not book a slot in the evening for delivery. You don't have someone, you don't go online and say, we'd like a burglar tonight, please, after 11 o'clock. You don't know when burglars are going to come, do you? So that's the first thing. It's unexpected. The second thing, he likens it to labour pains. Well, I can't say that I know too much about that personally, except I have observed them three times. They are sudden when they start, but once they start, it's expected that they're going to carry on and they're unavoidable and unescapable. You know, that's just what birth is about. So, they're both sudden, but once you're in it, it's unavoidable and you can't escape from it, is what Paul's trying to say. So how do we get ready for this? Well, Paul says it's quite clear. You don't need to be alarmed, don't need to be alarmed at all, but stay alert, he says in verse 6 of chapter 5. Stay alert. How does the burglar catch us out? Well, there are two things, first of all. First of all, it's dark at night time, and most of us don't sleep with a night light. Well, some might sleep with a night light, but most of us are in darkness, okay, so we can't see what's going on. And the second thing is, we're asleep. So we're not conscious of what's going on unless, you know, the burglar comes in and knocks the TV over, in which case we probably would hear it and jump out of our skin. And he also adds, just for a bit of spice, he says, and also that's the time that some people are drunk. So there might be a bit more than sleep. It might be a drunken stupor as well. So these are things which we associate with burglars and nighttime. And he says, unbelievers are people of the night and darkness. So they will be caught out by Jesus' coming again. They're going to be caught out because they're going to be asleep. And they're going to be in the dark. He said, but you, believers, you are people of the light. You live in the light, in the daytime, in the new age that Jesus has ushered in. We've been transferred into this kingdom of light already. We're in it. Peter puts it like this. For he has called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. God has changed our status. We're in a bit of an overlap zone currently, but we're definitely in the light. It's only when Christ comes in glory that the old will be done away with completely. In the meantime, he says, you should not be wearing your pyjamas. No. We're not to be going to bed to sleep at night time in the dark and get caught out. No, he says, put on your spiritual armour. Now we all know that Paul's got a thing about spiritual armour, and in Ephesians chapter 6 he goes right through in detail, and every time he mentions armour it's not always exactly the same. He talks about here the armour of faith and love, and in Romans the shining armour of right living. And in Corinthians, we use the weapons of righteousness for attack and defence, he says. And Ephesians, it helps us to stand firm against the strategies of the devil. God has provided his spiritual armour for our protection. And what is our hope founded on? It's founded on the fact, as he puts in verse 9, that Jesus took God's anger, his wrath for our sin, on himself. He took the punishment instead of us. So now, as we put our trust in him, our future is secure. We live in unity with him now and forevermore. So we have nothing to fear at the time of judgment. We've been declared not guilty. So what we should do is be alert to live this life out for him. We're people of the light and not of the darkness. If we're living for him, we won't be caught out. When he comes back, if he comes back in our lifetime, or when we die, we will be prepared, is what Paul's saying. So he's saying, don't give up work. Work in the Spirit for God. Live for him. Witness for him. That's what you should be doing. And then you have nothing to fear, and you'll be ready. So, the only response, he says, to all this in the last verse we looked at, verse 11, is to continually remind one another of these facts. They are to encourage us, to build us up as stronger believers. Whether we like it or not, the end is inevitable, unescapable, and whether we're dead or alive when it takes place, the great hope is for a Christian is that through Jesus' death and resurrection, we're safe from harm, kept for eternity for him, as honoured guests. We've been invited to that marriage feast of the Lamb. What a wonderful hope we have. So there's no need, he tells the Thessalonians, to be worried about people in your family who died as believers. They're going to be there too. It'll all happen at the same time, folks. Don't worry about it, he says. And then he says, don't worry about judgment either, because Jesus has paid the price. Just live for him in the light and you'll be ready. You won't be caught out like many people will. Honoured guests.